President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. Got a great show for you tonight on this February the 19th on the West Coast, or if you are in the Eastern or Central time zones, then you know it is the early morning hours of February the 20th. Welcome, and I guess, where do we start? Well, we're going to get right into our interview tonight. Let me preface the introduction by just pointing out that there seems to be a rabid ramping up of the satanic influence upon society, and I'm speaking upon all of humanity, and we can say on the whole planet Earth, for that matter. Energies are changing, people are waking up, people are sensing things are on the horizon, and sure enough, they pop up. A couple of weeks ago, we thwarted, and I can say this with some certainty, we thwarted 7 false flag events, which were designed to be nuclear attacks on United States cities that were to be blamed on Al-Qaeda. And Al is a pretty popular guy these days, I could say. And then we've had a series of plane crashes that have occurred within the span of a month. 2 of them, I think, around a week apart. We had a plane crash with Mike Connell, who was to testify regarding election corruption. And this goes back to the Bush regime. We're not talking about what occurred in the past or most recent election. And then his plane crashed on approach to Akron, Ohio, some miles outside of the airport. Then we had a more recent crash, which occurred actually when tonight's guest was on the show the last time, the night of February the 12th. Or the morning of the 13th, and we were actually doing some real-time analysis of what was being shown on television, and it's turned out that this seems to be an organized event. It's been blamed on ICE by the media, and another guest we had on twice this week, Dr. Qasem Khalil, and I basically began debunking this, and we've not just done it on Evident Footprints. We've been on several shows on Republic Broadcasting Network, bringing some research information forward, and it's just too coincidental that the people that came forward as eyewitnesses, and I use that term with reservation, happen to have similar addresses in different parts of the country, and they show to be part of what seems to be an organization of hit squads that work for certain corporations, and they work for political parties, or for politicians, or for behind-the-scenes puppeteers, we could call them. So we may talk a bit about that, but it's obvious that Satan is in high gear these days, and those of you that are paying attention to what's going on can certainly discern the satanic or the evil influence behind the world's events. With that, and not related to that topic at all, is tonight's guest, who happens to be a world-renowned researcher. He's got one of the most popular websites on the internet, educate-yourself.org. He is a journalist himself. He is also a metaphysical scientist and a good friend. His name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to Evident Footprints yet again.
Thank you very much, Don. I appreciate your warm words as always.
Well, Ken, you had the opportunity to pay attention a bit to what's been going on, and you were on the show, as I mentioned, last week at this time when this Buffalo plane crash started unfolding. And we've been paying attention to the fact that the media has been pushing this ICE issue nonstop. They even came up with witnesses that were describing seeing ice on the plane or ice on the trees, and all of these stories are fabricated. And even if there was ice on the ground, there's a tremendous amount of evidence coming out to show that there are some very unusual ties to the people who may have taken some responsibility in bringing this plane down.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think that we have to go into a deep discussion on that issue, but it shows how ruthless the powers that be have become.
Oh, yeah.
In ramping up this satanic influence and the ritualistic murder of people that are speaking out against the government or suing the government or looking for justice where their loved ones have been murdered, for example.
Yep.
Which is the case of Beverly Eckert, who happened to be on that plane that crashed in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than coincidental, isn't it, that you know, those two plane crashes, this mystery crash that occurred in the Hudson River is one that I failed to mention during my introduction. Mm-hmm. Highly unusual that this is going on, but it's almost like they test their equipment to see if it's working properly, and then when they're ready to target a victim, they take him out.
Yeah, this was interesting. The last time we did a interview, I guess was on the, was it the 13th? Do I have the date correct?
12th, yeah, the 12th and the 13th. I referred to that date last Thursday, let's put it that way.
Okay, so while we're having our interview, which starts at 10 p.m. Pacific time, you're catching on the TV monitor news of this crash of this airplane just outside of Buffalo, and as we're talking about the topic at hand that we had launched into, you were telling me that you're seeing something very strange here, and that you were reporting on it as intermingled with the conversation that we had started together. And in subsequent to that night, you've had perhaps three or four or five radio shows with Dr. K and others concerning this very crash. And what we saw there was something that happens frequently in our country. Somebody, a woman in this case named Betty Eckert,
I think it's Beverly Eckert, actually.
Oh, excuse me, Beverly. Had instigated lawsuits against the government, New York Port Authority people, I suppose. And she wasn't backing down. What they had done with other victims of people who died in 9/11 is that they were able to get them to accept money from the government, and they promise not to pursue any further legal action or make waves in the press and that sort of thing, which is what most people do. They don't want to try to fight the government, even if they suspect foul play. You pay them enough money, most people will, you know, grudgingly accept it and stop complaining in the public. But this lady wasn't backing down. She stuck to her guns. She knew it was an inside job. She knew her husband was just one of many who were simply sacrificed in a murder ritual that day, and she wasn't going to, you know, let it slide. So this happens to people who have the guts to go against the government. If you recall, George Bush, I think it was in his first administration, I'm not sure, but there was a black lady, I forget her name, who had sued him because she had accused him of fathering a child. And that started to work its way through the news, and sure, you know, next hearing or the next phase of her lawsuit was coming up to court, and she got so far in the lower, you know, in the lower proceedings but you know, this it was gathering momentum, and this lawsuit was coming up. Well, don't you know it, that she dies in a car crash. What a shock, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who, you know, gets in the face of the government, particularly with a lawsuit that's going to reveal something the government doesn't want to reveal, those people are suicided, killed in some way. And if you remember a few years ago, there was a man in England, I'm trying to remember his name, he had a rather high position with the government, too. It was Dr. David somebody, perhaps you recall the name. This man had absolute, you know, rock solid proof. He'd gone to the government that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, et cetera. And he was just making way too many waves, exposing the fraud of the British government, our government, in attacking. I forget his name. This is maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, et cetera. It was obviously after, you know, the 2003 invasion of Iraq. That man was found dead in his car. He committed suicide, don't you know? And this is what they do. Let's face it. Let's stop dancing around, beating around the bush. These,
no pun intended.
Yeah, these cases are simply, you know, these people are being murdered, and people who are really savvy, if they're worried about the government taking them out, they don't travel on commercial airliners because they know that's a convenient way to get rid of people. You know, the vast bulk of crashes in the last 30 or 40 years were not accidents. They were engineered crashes because they wanted to get rid of somebody. That Lockerbie, Scotland, deal, I forget his, what was the number on that one? Is that a TWA? No.
Yeah, I think that was a TWA. I don't
okay,
remember.
Okay, well, Lockerbie, Scotland, that crash. Maybe it was Pan Am. Maybe it's Pan Am flight. But there was, that probably was an onboard explosive, but, you know, the guys they blamed for it are not the ones they attempted to hang it on a couple Libyans. It was an inside job, you know, CIA, Mossad, MI5, you know, the intelligence services of the West, that were behind it. There were some people on board that plane. They didn't want to, you know, arrive on the ground alive. So they just blew them out of the air. And I remember a few years ago up in Canada, there was a couple of flights. Was one in Nova Scotia, I believe. There was someone on board that, you know, needed to be exterminated. So they blow up these planes, and they have a lot of high-tech ways to do that. At TWA 800 over New York, that was quite some time ago. That was surely a missile, probably two missiles that took that one down. But I mentioned to you that Otto Skorzeny revealed in this interview that was recorded in a book by Jim Keith, the name of the book was Secret and Suppressed, that the Nazi International, as he referred to this, organizations of Nazis that regrouped and rebuilt following World War II and, you know, infiltrated the U.S. government, infiltrated the whole world, South America, you know, they have a big underground base in the South Pole in Antarctica, it's called New Schwabenland.
Mm-hmm.
This Nazi International, you know, grew in power and influence, and they developed what he's referring to in this interview, which took place, I guess, if I got the timeline right, the interview took place somewhere in the early mid 80s, if I remember. It was a taped interview, and someone made that tapes available to Jim Keith somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s, and he put it together in this book. And he didn't name, well, other than Otto Scorzani, most of the other principals in the story. He just identifies by the first initials. However, Scorzani's telling this story to this man who was, you know, who Scorzani viewed as an insider, a German, who he felt he could trust with the info. So, and he explained to them how they have these ultrasonic beam weapons. This is going back to the early 1970s, and that they took down some aircraft intentionally to send the message to the, was it McDonnell Douglas? I believe it was McDonnell Douglas. When I first put up the story, I said Boeing, but someone corrected me. I think it was McDonnell Douglas. They had maybe the DC-10, might have been at McDonnell Douglas. Long story short, the Germans, this Nazi group that Scorzani's in, had a big financial interest in what was then a just growing European aircraft manufacturer that later became known by the name of Airbus. But I believe the remnants of the Messerschmitt factory was, you know, part of that group. And later on they teamed with French, and, you know, they called the operation Airbus. But at the time, this was early 70s, McDonnell Douglas Boeing had the market in commercial airlines. And the reason that Scorzani explains in the book that they took a plane down at a Paris air show, I guess it was a flight from Turkey, as a demonstration that they have the ability to do this. And this was a pressure tactic on McDonnell Douglas and Boeing to essentially pay protection money so that their planes wouldn't go down. Airbus, the Messerschmitt group, the German group needed more time, you know, to get more funding, to build up tooling, etc. But they wanted to essentially take over domination in the commercial airliner production market, but they weren't ready yet. But in the interim, they weren't just going to let Boeing get stronger or McDonnell Douglas make up. No, they're going to shake them down for a lot of money. And it simply boiled down to this. They got the idea that, you know, if they paid this money, their planes wouldn't, you know, have these accidents. And if they didn't pay the money, then there would be accidents. Well, I've sent you the link to those pages. But so we know from Scorzani that from the early 70s, they had a way to, with a completely untraceable force field, an ultrasonic beam in this case, could so set up a resonant vibration in the aircraft, whether the aircraft was attempting to land or whether it was attempting to take off. There are certain stresses on the aircraft and both times, okay, versus, you know, when it's 30,000 feet in the air and just, you know, flying along with the jet stream.
Mm-hmm.
And they, from a ground location, they could aim this weapon at it, and it would cause it to vibrate in such a way structurally, the thing would, you know, would have a calamitous failure, and it would crash. And you can't trace it. So what they do is, you know, the officials go in there and they essentially concoct some, or what sounds like it's going to carry water the best, to give to the public as to why it went down. I mean, many of these planes went down in perfectly clear weather. There was no, you know, logical reason why the plane should.
Yeah.
Now, here we had this plane in Buffalo in which it evidently was intentionally taken down. They wanted to get rid of this woman, Beverly Eckert.
You know, there's some synchronicities in this whole thing, too. And there was a reference by one of our listeners made to a Deanne Burley interview about a year ago where Michelle Obama was quoted as having done the paperwork for Sidley Austin, the law firm she and Barack Obama worked for, who had they did the patent work on these types of devices. And they were writing what are called Tonti schemes, or some people call them Tontine, but they're named after Tonti, who is another Charles Ponzi from Napoli, Italy. And and these schemes, these are financial schemes where they take out an insurance policy on a group of individuals, and every member of the group becomes a beneficiary every time someone of the group dies. And eventually the last person standing, so to speak, is the one that reaps the rewards of all these monies that are paid out. And since they're the ones doing the insurance, it's an inside job all the way. They don't get caught. Now, this goes back to the 1600s that this type of policy was in force. Although they probably didn't call it that at the time, but it was considered like an investment. It was just a way of pooling the money. And who did Beverly Eckert speak to most recently? Barack Obama. Is it not a coincidence that that these groups work for Sidley Austin? Now, there are some other people out there from the military who are conducting some independent research. This thing is, I'm coming and to, and also Dr. Qasem Khalil is coming to the same conclusions that these groups are nests of spies working for the Israeli Mossad and likely for the CIA and other intel agencies in a very corrupt government. This is RICO activity here. Okay, this is racketeering. This is organized crime. And it's merely that. 9/11 was nothing but a big bank heist and, and a cover-up of all the financial scams, and we're still reaping the rewards of that today. This is all about money and about power and control and just being ruthless, and it's very dark and evil and satanic. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about some of the findings that you're coming across in that area as well.
That's what I would like to devote the bulk of the evening to, is to talk about the, let's say, the gathering strength of the dark side, we'll call it, in attempting to supplant the principles of charity, faith, hope, love thy enemy as thyself, the sort of teachings that Jesus had stated when he was on earth. Now, he wasn't, of course, the only person to ever talk about these principles, but just a couple days ago, I reposted an essay that a man named James Bartley had originally posted to the internet in 1999. And it had to do, the topic of the essay was, he titled it Common Sense 2.
Ken, I got to interrupt just for a moment. We're getting a little bit of wind distortion on your mic, if you can maybe adjust it a hair.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, right there it is, yeah.
Okay. All right, I put it a little below.
Okay.
So anyway, James Bartley is a person who's had a lot of encounters with negative alien beings, reptilians especially, but greys as well. And he's a close friend and colleague of a woman named Dr. Carla Turner, who was essentially killed a few years ago by the dark side. She was given a fatal disease which accelerated her, you know, her normal lifespan, because she had so aggressively exposed the reptilians and their agenda, and she did not back down. She was a very brave person. So she was warned, if she keeps on coming at them as hard as she did, that they were going to take care of her. Of course, they have the ability to induce a heart attack. They can give a chosen victim cancer, etc. They have the ability to cause people death by disease induction. Anyway, Bartley's essay, Common Sense 2, is a rebuttal that he composed at the time to the advice which Dr. Richard Boylan had given to a female abductee in a forum that, you know, talked about abductions, et cetera. Now, Bartley claims straight out that Richard Boylan himself is a shape-shifting reptilian, and that he's one of these guys who are put-up jobs or straw men, as it were, to represent, what shall we say, represent humanity in defense against abductions and alien influence, etc., in our life. But he, in fact, is part of the offensive. He's kind of the controlled opposition type guy. And anyway, his essay is very well done. I put it up once in 2007, but I just reposted it a day or two ago because it does go to the heart of the matter. And one of his first paragraphs is, in this essay, he says, it is about spiritual warfare, with capitalizing the word is. And that's the part I want to talk about tonight, because it seems that the Illuminati, the New World Order, and their alien overlords seemed totally bent on achieving this shift in people's allegiance from Heavenly Father, God, the Creator, and His, let's say, well-known children, you know, Jesus Christ, etc., other famous or well-known spiritual leaders down through the ages, and supplant that hierarchy with Lucifer, with Satan. And this is really so important to them. They have said, or at least James Bartley has said, is that the New World Order, the Illuminati, feel that they simply must achieve the spiritual, I don't want to use, perhaps the conversion is not the best word, but the spiritual reversal towards looking upon Lucifer as being Almighty God, as Lucifer being the one we should be worshiping. Lucifer should be the one we should give our allegiance to, etc. And he says here in this essay that without this commitment by sufficient numbers in the world, the New World Order thing can't work. They can't get their one world fascist feudal system in place. So what they're after is the hearts and minds of all of humanity. And if they can convince enough people to reject, let's say, the loving tenets of Christianity, you know, the loving tenets of Buddhism, the loving tenets of Hinduism or Islam, etc., if they can get people to reject those tendencies or those beliefs, belief structure, in life-affirming ideas, life-supportive ideas, and rather turn towards destructive, wanton side of the scale, then that's what they need to do. So they want to supplant. Christianity is the largest, when you look at the entire world's population, is the largest single religion on the planet, Christianity. There's more people that say they are Christians than any other religious or conventional religious group on the planet. So their goal is to destroy Christianity. Now,
yeah, they do that, I think, first of all, by corrupting the leadership so that people shy away from organized religion in that sense. And really, it's been corrupt for a long time. So
there's a multiple, yeah. You know, the plan is multiple, you know, is multifaceted. It's,
sure.
They're not just working on one avenue, of course.
Yeah.
As if anything, when an institution this large, this well, you know, entrenched in so many millions of people around the world, naturally they're going to come at it from many fronts. And of course they have, you know, gotten dark people to, you know, infiltrated, mind-controlled, compromised people to be high officials in the Catholic Church. They've gotten their own people to be, or close to their own people to be Pope, perhaps. Or, in other words, today I think we can see that it's particularly the last number of popes, particularly from John Paul I was assassinated, as you know. He was only in office for 30 days or so because he was about to take apart that whole corrupt Vatican banking thing, and that would have led to the infiltration of P2 into the Vatican, etc. So we couldn't have that. So they arranged for him to, quote, have a heart attack after only being, you know, Pope for 30 days or so. And, of course, the straight world, never, you know, called it murder, but the alternative news world, you know, picked up on that right away. So he was gotten out of the way because he wasn't quite the boy they wanted in charge. So the next guy, you know, was more cooperative and under mind control. Bryce Taylor confirmed that John Paul II was definitely a mind control individual because she had a number of meetings with him and saw him in the trance-like state when a mind control victim is in a situation where the handles are there, but they don't necessarily need that person at that moment. They put them in park, what they call, mind control victims call park mode. So she saw the then living Pope John Paul II in park mode. She came into a room. He was there. He was. She knows what it looks like. She's seen many victims in that state, and it's just essentially they're sitting there in a chair in a trance.
Yeah, we're talking like parking a car, not
yeah, parking
being out.
A car, right. People are milling around him, talking, you know, all close, and he's just sitting there in a trance. His eyes don't move. He's just in a trance. He was just parked. And then she had to tell him things, perform certain, quote, miracles in front of him, et cetera. And so she confirmed absolutely that he was under mind control, and I don't doubt that the current one is under mind control as well. So, that being said, however, though, that doesn't mean that the whole corpus of the Catholic Church, every cardinal, every bishop, every nun, every neighborhood priest is part of the New World Order. You know, like some, you know, wild people, you know, will say on the internet. So I've written, you know, a few rebuttals to some people who've, you know, just gone overboard, you know, and of course there is this thing in the media the last, perhaps, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 years or so, every time they have a story about a priest who's accused of fondling an altar boy or something, I mean, they just blow it up for weeks in the media. I mean, it's just amazing how they just, you know, it's like Britney Spears, you know, it's an every night deal and they're just pumping it and pumping it and pumping it. So when you hear daytime talk show hosts, you know, there's always this, you know, there's these snide jokes about Catholic priests and young boys, you know, that the comedians use, you know, late night talk and so forth. And you can see there's a pattern going on here.
Mm-hmm.
They're intentionally working this. Now,
well, it's not just in the church, though. It's in politics, too.
Right.
Heavily. heavily, and it's become a worldwide business as well. Yeah.
But I think I can say pretty safely that there are as many rabbis who have observed children, particularly rabbis who've abused children, as there are Catholic priests. Perhaps there's many more. When you read a really important book, such as Michael Hoffman's huge recently published book called Judaism Discovered, you find out that there's certain rabbinic groups who are strict believers in the Talmud, feel that it's okay to molest a child just so long as the child is younger than a certain age. Because when the child is younger than a certain age, they don't even consider the child a human being. They refer to this child as mere water. And that, so therefore, it's okay to, sexually violate a very young child, because that child, I think it's 3 years old, if I remember the number. I might have the number wrong. But this book, Talmud, is pretty amazing when you start reading what's there. And I'm sure plenty of rabbis have abused plenty of young children, maybe much more so than, the fraction of 1% of Catholic priests that might have done that. And yet, you don't hear a word about that in the mainstream. Never a word about a rabbi ever abusing a child. But you get a steady diet of Catholic priests. Why? They want to create bad press for the Catholic Church. They're moving towards the day in which they want to install the New World Order. And before that happens, though, they want people to be on board their one world religion. Now, they need to destroy Christianity in order to replace it with their one world religion. Now, what is the one world religion? They don't really say at this stage, but you get a lot of hints because there are groups that have been working at trying to very stealthily, let's say, create interest and fascination with different, let's say, ideas. Now, one guy who was a master at this, in fact, you'd have to call him the father of modern Satanism in the 20th century, was Aleister Crowley. And he wrote lots of books. He had a secretary, a guy named Israel. Well, he used the name Rigardi in his books, but I think his true name was Rigardu or Regardu or close to that. Anyway, Crowley wrote a lot of books. And Crowley started an organization that's very strong today, and it's flourishing everywhere in the world, in England, in Europe, United States, Asia, Japan, Australia. It's called it goes by the initials the OTO, which it has different ways to call it. You can call it by English or by its Latin, but it's the
Ordo Templi Orientis.
Orientis, right. Yeah. So, or the Oriental Templars order. Mm-hmm. And what the OTO, because of the work that Crowley did, and he wasn't, let's say, your in your face Satanist, so that, devil worship, deviltry, etc., was a known phenomenon, obviously, but we tend to think of it as being more of a something that occurred in much earlier times, in so-called pagan times.
Mm-hmm.
But what Crowley did is that he had a number of disciples, such as, John Parson, who's of the Pasadena Jet Propulsion Lab, etc., played a big role in NASA and in the aerospace program of the United States. He was a Satanist, and he was a Crowley disciple of the OTO. And he had a big influence on a lot of people and a lot of government institutions, such as NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And what the OTO does is that they try to sell themselves in what Crowley said in his book, is this idea of do what thou wilt, you know, do as thou wilt. In other words, the law, according to Crowley's logic, the law is whatever you want to do is okay. That's what the law is.
And he would say, he would frequently say, the end justifies the means.
Oh, absolutely. But his whole thing was is that he was going to, quote, free people of the constrictions of traditional religions like Christianity by, you know, opening this door of freedom that... But he was very cagey. He was careful. He didn't directly say, you know, let's worship Lucifer, et cetera. He didn't do that publicly. Now, he certainly engaged in a lot of satanic rituals privately. You know, a lot of babies and children and adults have been murdered by his hand in groups he was involved with. So he's committed plenty of satanic murders in his life. And but the way he wrote about it, though, unless, you know, you were extremely naive, he sold it. He sold it in a way so that it sounded like this idea, well, this might be interesting. This might be fascinating. Let me look into this. Now...
Yeah, like he was doing research is the general tone of what he's doing.
Kinsey, you know, Alfred Kinsey, the famous Kinsey Report guy, he was drawn into this cult. And he was a Satanist, and he was a pedophile big time, a pederast big time. So he did all these tests to find out how these are pre-puberty children now would come to, you know, have an orgasm. He would measure it with a stopwatch, and he had test results from something like 1,800 kids. You know, he stopwatched them. Well, obviously, he was having sex with these kids, and so the influence of Crowley's writing, the OTO, have infiltrated into every strata of American life. You have people who you normally wouldn't think of being part of this sort of belief system, but are judges, attorneys, politicians,
law enforcement officials,
law enforcement, doctors, every possible strata of society is substantially infiltrated with, you know, OTO type personalities who are really, when you come down to it, they're Satanists. They will jump up and down if you accuse them of being a Satanist.
And these people, Ken, if I can interject something here, it wasn't like Crowley just came out of the woodwork. He was following Adam Weishaupt's teaching, and that's, you know, Weishaupt is considered to be the founder of the Illuminati and the
Bavarian Illuminati,
you know,
right.
This concept of the New World Order. But from a spiritual perspective, you know, there are people today that are looking at this concept of the controllers and their goal to establish a New World Order, and this is contrary to spirituality, where God is pure spirit and God's children are spiritual beings. Satan takes the approach of technology. And so you have control of energy resources and food and education and computers and the internet. See, these are just vehicles or cell phones. All of this stuff is designed to be some aspect of the overall control. But they're sold to us as conveniences that will make life more exciting or more rewarding or more enriched, more meaningful, when in reality it keeps everyone in a thought-conscious mode and an ego-based mode in disregard of the spiritual hierarchy of the universe or God.
You're absolutely right.
You know, and then you mentioned NASA, for example, or JPL. There's more example of the technology going into space, going beyond the Earth, as if that's going to give them some godly power. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to make that distinction that we're talking really about, you know, spiritual warfare here.
Yep.
And there's not anything positive about what these people are doing. If you think that their system makes money and that gives you the opportunity to be wealthy or successful, which is what they drive into your subconscious constantly,
right,
through the bombardment of advertisement and psychological control in the churches and in education and with the media and in the movies. It's all technology. It's all use of technology.
So. Yes, you're absolutely right. That's a very important truism when it comes to people who ascribe to principles of goodness and righteousness and positive behavior, is that the connection to the Creator, to God, the Father, is direct, and whereby the dark side needs to substitute, since Lucifer is not the Creator, but rather was created by the Creator. They must substitute technology. So, yeah, you're quite right. There is this dichotomy that's clearly seen if you step back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
When you see those systems that are totally devoted to technology as being the way, versus, you know, nature, or doing things naturally when trying to, it's the dark side always embraces the technological side, always. They never turn to the spirit side.
Yeah, and you know, a thought that comes to mind here too, and I'd like you to comment on this. We came out of an industrial age and we went into this information age, and of course all the industry was taken out of the country in the process of bombarding us with this information, because this has a purpose, as you pointed out, the mind control aspect and this aspect of pushing us away from the things that cause us to become conscious beings or of a higher vibration. So all these things are designed to lower our vibration and keep us imprisoned in this information network, which is really based on lies. Like you said, Crowley said, do as thou wilt.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Well, he's recognizing it's a free will universe, but do anything. Anything. Right. There's no limit to what these people will do.
Yeah.
So we're seeing evidence of that, aren't we, in every aspect of our society today.
Yeah, and what we have, and people need to recognize, I was just reading something that I had put up a number of years ago, but I reposted more information about it, is the way the FEMA, local police, National Guard, behaved towards the people of Florida during Hurricane Andrew. I'm trying to remember the year. Is it 92, correct, or is it 96? I can't remember the year off the top of my head. But Hurricane Andrew, maybe it was 96. It happened in August, I recall. Was one of the most powerful hurricanes to ever hit Florida, because they had sustained winds that were as high as 250 miles an hour on land. And I think it's safe to say that it was probably, surely, a jacked-up system, a HAARP jacked-up hurricane system, as we know Katrina was such a jacked-up system. So this was an early run to see how well their operations would go. And the people were told over the, you know, radio, et cetera, that the winds weren't going to get much over 50 miles an hour, and stay home. Don't try to go out. Just remain home. Don't try to evacuate. Remain home. They did, and in most cases, the homes were blown down, because 250 miles an hour sustained winds will blow down, particularly trailer parks and other flimsy, you know, buildings that are common there, and, you know, Dade County, Florida. And the police, the National Guard, and FEMA were Johnny on the spot. They had all this equipment in place. They had these body bags. They had these, but for about 10 days to 2 weeks, I'm not sure, it was a rather long period of time, all they did, instead of helping anybody, was merely pick up bodies and body parts and just, you know, they put them in these body bags. Well, it was kind of a body cleanup detail, but they would help nobody. They simply didn't help. And anyone who, you know, pleaded for help was, you know, essentially, you know, got the backside of their fist or a boot. And people were flabbergasted. And this guy, I forget his name, Frank Kovanovich or something close to that, wrote an essay about what happened. He was there. He lived through it. He saw it. He says it was the most incredible betrayal that he ever witnessed in his life.
Mm-hmm. For reference, Ken, that was, I think, August of 1992.
Okay, it was 92.
Four years after Pan Am Flight 103, by the way.
Okay. All right. The point is that, you know, that was FEMA, you got to remember, began in 1979. You know, it was supposed to be for federally funded to handle emergencies like hurricanes, mm-hmm. floods, etc. That was the whole pretext of the organization. Of course, that they've been spending the money on, the taxpayer money as well as secret money, drug money, for black operations, for all these underground bases that have been built, as well as the above-ground concentration camps that we know about today. There's over 800 of them in this country. That's where the money and the training really was going into, and the sort of people that they drew into FEMA are people who are no longer human beings. They don't act and think like human beings. They were cruel, uncaring. They treated these bodies like it was so much rubbish. They were just, you know, gathering up these body parts. In many cases, there was just mass open pit graves. They were just, people's bodies were being bulldozed into mass open pit graves. It was horrendous what took place there, and the fact that they wouldn't help anybody. They wouldn't give them food. They wouldn't give them water. They wouldn't let them leave. They couldn't even get out. They were confined, this area, because FEMA was running an operation. They wanted to train their boys. It was a training operation, just like Katrina was a training operation. And they wanted to, you know, get their boys ready psychologically and physically and work out the bumps so that when they have the whole country go to martial law, you know, when, you know, the full, you know, degree of the betrayal becomes obvious to all Americans, they're going to be, you know, ready for it. They want to be battle-hardened for the treachery that they're going to pursue. So how did these people who are participating in this get that way? Well, they've been first chosen from ranks, you know, military types particularly a lot of people in the military, they're being mind controlled, they don't know it, but particularly warriors, special operation soldiers, Navy SEALs, and or a First Earth Battalion type special superhero, Superman soldiers, etc. These guys are all programmed. And, you know, they're not dealing with normal human beings here. Many of them probably are of, you know, alien hybrid group, which is, there's a lot of people among us now who aren't 100% human. The alien hybridization program has been going on for a long time. And the part of humanity that is a human has human emotions, feelings, and spiritual orientation. They are the ones that are being targeted by young children, for instance, the Harry Potter movies. They're trying to sell a fascination with magic, you know, spelled M-A-G-I-C-K, which the K gives you the inference of the occult influence versus, you know, illusion, magic, M-A-G-I-C, you know, stage illusion. Well, anyway, they can't come out in with these movies, you know, and preach Satanism and devil worship. No, no, no. They're selling it as kind of good magic or white magic, as it's often called. And I can recall Helena Stokely, the girl who was involved in the Jeffrey McDonnell murders of his family in 1970. She was part of the group that entered McDonald's home that night and killed McDonald's wife and his two young daughters. She didn't herself participate in the murder, but she witnessed it. She had said in subsequent confessions to Ted Gunnison that were videotaped and written that she was trying to learn to be a white witch. She got drawn into Wicca, and she said, I just wanted to be a white witch. I wanted to do good with my magic powers. And a lot of young, naive people are drawn in under this rubric that it's okay, or let's say it doesn't have evil purposes. Now, this includes tarot card reading, which many people will do, particularly here in California. You go to a party with young people, someone has a tarot deck there, and people are fascinated by it. But it's a veiled, that's the word I want, it's a veiled vehicle to ultimately draw you towards Satanism. That's the goal. And that's the sort of thing that the OTO tries to, you know, diffuse into society. Obviously, Ouija boards is another example of that. But, you know, tarot card readings, you know, gypsy type, fortune telling, that type of fascination is the way they draw people in, because they don't know what the deeper deal is. Just like Masons, Freemasons, who are drawn into the lower degrees. For them, it's all fraternity, brotherhood, getting ahead in business, you know, mutual backs, you know, greasing your career track type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're called these people are called the Outer Portico Brothers, because they're not part of the inner deal.
No, these aren't trapeze artists you're talking about.
No. When they get to the inner deal, you know, when they get 33 and then they go, in fact, Freemasonry goes up as high as 997 degrees, I recently read. When you get into these higher realms, then what they were telling you was a kind of vague references to, you know, the Creator, the Lord. It's not exactly God the Father in heaven they're talking about. They have another Lord in mind.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same way the OTO gets people. It's this outer deal when they're drawing in. Rosicrucians is another organization that draws people in to Satanism ultimately. But the outer presentation of these groups is kind of a fascination with things, magic, and so forth.
Yeah, metaphysical gifts. By the way, the numerology for the word magic, with the K on the end, M-A-J-I-C-K, or M-A-G-I-C-K, I should say, is 44. Hmm. We're on our 44th president right now. Four times the number 11. That's another way to look at it, or 11-11, and the Hegelian dialectic, 11-11, again. So, you know, these are just these little hidden things that are inside the words themselves.
So, what they're trying to do today, there's a big push on for the last decade or more, but particularly in the last decade, and intensely slow in the last 5 or 6 years, to promote homosexuality. We just had a referendum here in California that was turned down, that the, you know, the pro homosexual groups were very angry about. But you see this in the movies, you see it on television, of course, and on American TV, but I also see it on Japanese TV. They promote personalities who are openly gay, you know, dress like women, act like women, etc. Some of them have had sex change operations, others haven't. But they're on every show, you know, these talk show, panel show, variety shows, comedy shows. They always have a fair showing of, you know, people who are gay and or, you know, dress, cross dresses.
They show them on C-SPAN too when they show the House of Representatives or the Senate.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd add that.
Yeah, they want to expand the idea that being gay is perfectly normal and there's nothing odd about it, and therefore we should sanctify gay marriage. And I mean, you can definitely see it's a big organized push to promote homosexuality.
You know, there was a time on television when there was this wholesome quality, if that's a proper word. I doubt that TV viewing it
very well that time. Yeah,
but you know, you had the June Cleavers and the Harriet Nelsons of the world that wore earrings while they were making breakfast.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were dressed up, and you didn't have this promiscuity that has really become quite obscene.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally, you know, swearing and getting into very risque topics that wouldn't have ever been tolerated. They've pushed it to that level degradation, haven't they?
Right, they continually push it, and that's why the television level of morality whether it's comedy, whether it's serious drama, whether it's soap operas, continuously goes down. And they're becoming more and more openly and flagrantly, you know, it's more than risque now. It's rather, you know...
it's risky.
Yeah, it's risky. Good. Okay, so anyway, they're trying to break down existing family-created mores of conduct, you know, particularly...
Ethics,
They want to break down the family unit, so they introduce no-fault divorce somewhere in the mid-70s. Why? They want to be able to make it possible for, let's say, the woman to leave the husband and get a divorce without having to prove anything in court. I want to divorce you. That's all there is to it. Now, in Japan, both parties have to agree to a divorce, or there is no divorce. No-fault divorce results in lots of battles over child custody, child support payments, that type of thing. Those conflicts grew out of no-fault divorce, and that was pushed through by the feminists. Feminists were geared up, put into place by the Illuminati in order to drive a wedge in the nuclear family. So for the Illuminati, the ideal way to be raised is essentially by the state. Have no allegiance necessary to your biological mother or father. You don't necessarily need to love them. This is what, of course, Hitler was trying to do in before World War II, he wanted, you know, state-raised children. So they use movies and television especially to influence kids, video games, to influence children towards combativeness, violence type of mindset, all these television shows that have jealousy, dog-eat-dog. We talked about this before, these so-called survivor shows. Dog-eat-dog themes. Betray your brother, you know, backstab. Better him than me. It's him or me. They want to create this jungle-type mentality.
Yeah, you know, it brings to mind a few shows that I know are broadcast on some of the cable channels, and you may not be seeing these. I know you're for
no,
our listening audience, you use an antenna still, and
right.
you're getting regular analog signals. They have these shows on some of the channels like MTV and VH1, and you might even see this on the Discovery Channel, or you know, something that you would think would have a higher standard of broadcasting in a sense,
yeah.
where they have competitions between people who are losing weight, and
yes.
and they become very vitriolic in a sense,
yes.
in terms
right.
of the other competitors and even about themselves or the judges. I mean, it's just total chaos. Or they have
yes.
these shows where they move a group of teenagers or beyond teenagers into a house to be totally dysfunctional. There's no theme other than these people are just being dysfunctional.
Right.
And
right.
and they make a show out of this.
Make a show.
Now,
right.
now these reality shows, they have to call them, are supposed to be the way life is, you see. So we're being mind-controlled into a system of behavior by what we see on TV.
Right, right. That is the point, right. That's the whole point. We can use other examples, the shows on daytime TV of the judge, you know, Judge Judy, Judge Brown, Judge whoever.
Judge
those
Hatchet,
are,
yeah.
Yeah, those are shows which engender, you know, obviously conflict. And they want to work the conflict. They want the, you know, they want the resentment, the animosity, the betrayal to fly. So that's what those shows are all about. Now, the pretense is, you know, judge, whoever it is serving justice. And I've listened to the show often enough. I mean, I'm bored by most of it, but the Judge Brown, for instance, tries to sound like an even-handed guy, and like, you know, he's trying to do justice. So that's the pretense of the show. But the real purpose of the show is to mind condition and inculcate the vibrations of conflict. That's what the show's really
yeah.
about.
You
I'm
know,
not even sure Judge Joe Brown knows that, but that's the real, true purpose of the show.
Well, you've seen Judge Judy, I'm sure, at least
yeah,
once or twice.
She can be a pain.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a friend who happens to be a musician, and his mother is a circuit court judge.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, my mother's a judge, that show's not real. That's actually what the kind of stuff that's going on in the courts or
yes.
worse, where you have a judge say, I will not have the law in my court,
right.
or I will not have the U.S. Constitution in this courtroom,
right.
Or telling the jury that they have to find the case in a certain manner, or you know, preventing evidence from being introduced intentionally, knowing that that will either exonerate the person or convict the person, depending on,
right.
you know, if it's a civil or a criminal case, and this is treated in these shows, the comedy shows. They're making a farce out of the judicial process, and yet these court shows that you're talking about. Remember the People's Court? Doesn't it have a communist sound to it?
Well, yes, absolutely.
You know, everything was the people's this, the people's party, right?
Yeah. Judge Wapner, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Judge Wapner was that way. He was actually quite reasonable. But
absolutely, but the name of, I'm sure he didn't pick the name of the show.
Yes.
But the producers who did, you know, knew exactly what they were doing, because they do, they're sending messages. They're sending messages to the subconscious mind.
Yeah, well, the producer of Inside Edition, the first major producer, became the producer of Judge Judy.
Okay.
So that shows you that they go from a muckraking news show to a courtroom
right.
show,
mm-hmm.
which is more muckraking. But
right.
but to listen to some of what said, it's not about bringing forth evidence. It's about her saying you're lying.
Exactly.
You know, right. and just
that's it. That's the point. Is that they're working the lower emotions, and they want to keep the listeners, the viewers, immersed in that world, so that when, you know, instead of you talking to your children or your brother or sister, you know, in a kind, polite, gentle, soft way, your influence to talk like Judge Judy, you know, and yell and be harsh and be crude. All these shows encourage coarseness and crude behavior and crude thoughts. And if you were, you know, raised well and you're an adult, you're more immune to that. But when you're a child, you're very susceptible to being molded by that influence. And that's, of course, why the television is filled with shows like that, why the movie is filled with horror shows particularly. They just keep on pumping these horror movies one after the other after the other. And horror movies have always been with us, but the ferocity of them and the frequency of them, you know, it seems to be now greater than ever. And I wouldn't dream of going to one of those movies. I wouldn't dream of doing that. Why? There's nothing pleasurable in being frightened, scared. Now, you know, as an adult, you know, you're less susceptible to being, you know, shocked by screen violence, but it's still, you know, it can certainly rattle you and unnerve you. Now, why do I want to go and see that? I don't want to do that. I mean, and yet, you know, I have the knowledge and the consciousness to know what, you know, what's trying to be done to me, and I could resist it. But can a 13, a 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old, the average, no way. They're easily harmed by that stuff. Now, if you're a tender soul, when you go to that stuff, you do it often enough, you're not going to be tender very often. You're going to become a much harder person, you know?
Well, you know, there's definitely a psyops going on with the whole concept of horror pictures or satanic, when I say pictures, I mean films.
Films, right.
You have, first of all, you have a war against the religion, regardless of what it is, right? There's this mystery religion that's supposed to come out, and it's going to profess to be one of peace and love and light, and it's being sold as that. But these movies are capitalizing on the biggest fear that people have. And it's that unspoken fear of death. Everything is about, you're sold things that you're told are going to make you healthy when they're actually toxins that will make you sick and cause you to die. Mm-hmm. You go see these movies and you get a glimpse of death of a very perverse kind, usually. I mean, how many people are walking around getting bit on the neck and having the blood sucked out of them by a vampire? They're doing that to us, all of us, through the financial system. So, you know, there's another way for it to happen. At least if you talk to a Romanian, they'll tell you that's what Dracula was about. He was about taxation and you know, murder. So the biggest fear that people have, death, is played up in the movies just to keep that going on a subconscious level.
Right.
And also influence their magic at the same time.
Yeah. Now, speaking of magic, I just want to point out that there is a guy who's been very popular on Japanese TV for probably the last 4 years. He goes by the screen name of Cyril, C-Y-R-I-L.
That's a common Japanese name?
Not at all. Of course,
I didn't think it was.
That word has an occult significance.
Yes.
He's a white man. He's a young guy. He's probably in his early 30s at this point, late 20s, early 30s. I've seen him on Japanese TV many times. If you assume he's a magician in terms of an illusionist, then he's got to be the greatest illusionist that has ever been born. I mean, it's when you see what he can do, it boggles the mind. He's surely gaining a reputation that will become known worldwide. He's big in Japan because that's where he sort of got his fame really took off, because he started out just doing street magic, and film crews came by, and they, well, that's the way it was portrayed to us. That might not have been how it actually happened, but that's what we're led to believe. Now he's a regular guest on shows devoted to featuring his, quote, magic. Now, he does things that are so unbelievable, there's no way that you can imagine how it can be an illusion. Now, my own take is I've seen him, between the way he dresses, the way he looks, and the sort of jewelry he wears and so forth, and above all, judging from the tricks that I see, I believe he's a black magician.
Well, you know, his numerology for the name Cyril comes out to a 6, by the way.
Okay.
It's just...
He certainly has a friendly personality, but when I look at his eyes, and when I see what he does and the way he dresses, I'm seeing a lot of, something dark going on there. Mm-hmm. And when you actually see his, quote, magic, it occurs to me the only way this can be done is that he's some sort of, you know, demon power is working with him to effect these performances, because there's just no way you can cause these illusions. Doesn't, you know, the technical ability isn't there. But I've seen him, for instance, levitate a woman outside. The first thing he did to do it, he had some people help him, you know, put 2 fingers under the, you know, just 2 or 3 people assist him in this. But he first, though, with a large, you know, black, maybe not a crayon, but a black charcoal thing or something, first thing he did is drew a large 5-pointed pentagram and then had her lay on that. And then he was able to levitate this woman. He did it, you know, there was obviously nothing on the road there or above that could... he truly canceled gravity under this woman. There's no question in my mind. But I'm also convinced that he's, you know, there's some sort of demonic entity working with him. And he specializes in certain things. This entity can make cards, for instance, go through glass or embed in glass. One of the tricks that he uses is that he can... be outside against a window of a coffee shop, for instance, and you can see the window's clear, you see people inside, and he'll take a deck of cards and he'll bend them in such a way that each card will separately fly out of his hand. He'll be 3 or 4 or 5 feet away from the window, and whatever the card that the lady in the audience had picked and marked with her name doesn't stick to the glass but is embedded inside the glass. It's not on the outside, it's not on the inside, it's in the interior of the glass. And, you know, someone's canceling out their, you know, normal three-dimensional physics and allowing these presentations to be taking place. Now, that's my own take on them. Now, I could be wrong, but I feel the guy's probably a black magician, because when you get into the satanic deal and you start, you know, making your commitments, so you write your name in blood, sell your soul and so forth, go through the rituals, you know, you gain powers. There's no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it. Black magicians have definite powers that we would call magical powers, levitation, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what this guy is. And I think, though, because people are just overwhelmed by his performance, anyone would be. I mean, it's a fantastic performance. There's no question about it. But I believe he's performing true black magic. It's not an illusion. Much of his act are illusions, and he lets the audience in on something. But that's part of the cover. Mm-hmm. He wants to pretend he's an illusionist, but of a, you know, an unbelievable caliber. But my take is he's a black magician.
Yeah, he calls his show The Magic Revolution, The Experience.
Yeah, thank you. You see, these are the allusions to satanic symbolism. The X shows up a lot in his stuff, you know?
Yes.
And when you actually, you know, see the performances, you realize, you know, this dude is a black magician. Now, by making him popular all over the world, he's going to play a role in drawing people towards that force. And that's why I started this talk about the spiritual. You know, the OTO is behind much of these effusions of this fascination with the occult, etc., into society, and particularly among young people. So naturally they're going to use magicians, magic shows type of thing. Naturally they're going to use tarot cards because it's so, you know, it's so California and kind of the thing that young people do at one of these parties, you know, wine and cheese parties, and the kind of the selling of, you know, white witchcraft. Wicca is supposed to be, you know, good, you know, for good purposes. That's what Helena Stokely said. Now, it's so poignant to hear her say this in her videotaped confession to Ted Gunnison when she brings this up, because she was sincere. She was the only one of the group who was involved in the murders that night who had a conscience. I mean, if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have known about the participants who were there that night. She, more than anyone, wanted to get McDonald exonerated. She ultimately was killed herself because she's talked. She was talking too much, particularly in a public forum with Ted Gunnison, etc. But it bothered her so much that McDonald was railroaded for the crime. He, you know, and of course he was the victim. His wife, who he loved, two children,
mm-hmm.
were the whole world to him. You know, and to not only lose them, then be accused of the crime yourself, have to go through a 9-year ordeal leading up to the trial, then he's convicted. You know, he thought he was going to win. He was convinced he was going to win.
Yeah.
He told himself, this is America, the American justice system, you know. He was convinced he was going to win, but he was totally framed and railroaded.
Yeah.
He was a patsy.
You know, in our closing moments here, Ken, because we're about out of time here, I'd like to point out something, and that's in terms of the research I'm doing and some others, that the locations for this group, in basically their headquarters are in the state of California. They used to be up north, closer to San Francisco, and they've moved down into the area anywhere from San Bernardino down to San Diego. Mm-hmm. And you see the financial institutions and the mortgage companies and technology companies and internet companies based in that region as well. So there's a tie to the technology, and not to mention the aircraft manufacturers and the military industrial complex. A lot of it is centered there in Southern California, isn't it?
Yep. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that was the point of the show, was to people listening to this to think about this infiltration into our society. How, above all, they're after the children. That's why the books, Stevie Has Two Mommies or something. These books that they're trying to get into the school system, they want to corrupt children, particularly to first get away from the loving closeness of having a mother and father there. And number two, this whole thing of selling the androgynous human. That's part of the Illuminati game plan. They don't want uniquely feminine females and uniquely, you know, macho males. They don't want that. At least not for the average slave that they want. They want this kind of androgynous, mm-hmm. anything goes mixed bag.
Do you remember on 9/11, the Florida school? I don't remember the name of the school, but our illustrious president was sitting
With the book upside down.
With the book upside down. And the name of that book, I think, was My Pet Goat.
Yep.
And you remember how when the teacher had the students reading, they were pounding their fist on the table or on the desks as they read? Do you remember that?
No, I don't, but so tell me.
Yeah, I don't remember the words, but every time they said their words, they were knocking, you know, knocking their hands like they were pounding a rhythm out.
Okay, I see.
And that was interesting because can you imagine that class up in the library where you're supposed to be quiet, reading and pounding on the table? This is considered normal?
Yes, exactly, right. So you can see there's a mind control game going on.
Right there on 9/11.
Right there on 9/11. And since you just mentioned, you know, the word goat, you know, the symbol of Satan is what the you know the on the tarot cards, when you see a picture of a goat, or the drawing I should say of a goat, that drawing was really made famous by a guy named Levi Ephelus, I think Ephelus Levi, in the 19th century when the tarot cards were first
I think
drawn.
It's Eliphas
Levi, thank you.
Or Eliphas, maybe?
Yeah. That goat head, the proper name for that goat head is Baphomet. Baphomet. Mm-hmm. And it's a symbol for Satan. And when we take a five-pointed star and turn it upside down so the single point is pointing downwards, that's a symbolic representation of Baphomet the goat.
Something that Hillary Clinton is very fond of during her campaigns.
Right. There's another word that also, the Mendez goat. So when you see allusions to goats and so forth, it's a satanic symbolism that's being, you know, sold as something, if you ever go into a Masonic temple, you'll see all these symbols, you know, besides the black and white floor, you know, squares on the floor, which we'll talk about perhaps on another occasion. People need to realize, though, that this attempt to get rid of Christianity particularly and replace it with this idea of one law. The law they're talking about is Aleister Crowley's Law of One. That's the law they're really getting at. But they'll dress it up in other things. It'll be a revolutionary something or other. They love to throw that word around.
Yeah.
They want to create the same sort of revolution that they created in France in 1788. That's the kind of revolution they want. They want you to give you the idea that they're liberating you, but they're really, the goal is to murder and enslave you.
Yes. Well, I wish we could keep going on, but we're out of time.
Yes.
It's been interesting, though. And, the next time we have you on, which will likely be, I think we have you on again this month, do we not? Or
yeah, I'll be on a few more times this month. One time we're on 2 days in a row, 23rd, 24th.
Oh, yeah, next Monday and Tuesday you'll be on the show twice in a row. So, I'd like to pick this up and to get into it. Now, we're doing this not for the purpose of promoting this. We're actually presenting something that the listening audience can do some research on. I get tons of email from people asking me to go to a particular website to see something, which is really what you're talking about in disguise many times. Mm-hmm. And I often, if I have the time, I'll fire back a quick note and just say, you know, use your discernment. I have a different take on this, and many times it's something that I've researched quite a bit, like you have.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're not asking anyone to believe this, you know, by all means, become responsible and do a little bit of research. If you're interested in this topic, do some digging into it, but use your discernment. Don't believe what you're reading. Mm. Come to some conclusions based on what you see or are facts that are unfolding. You'll see repeated patterns. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of disinformation. There's a lot of what's written is being written by fear mongers that are mm-hmm. just intending to prey on your superstitions and or your ignorance.
Yes.
In many cases, you know, you watch these movies and then you try to live real life and you see these things that you're interested in because it's got a different or a similar flavor to it that the movie has. And
yes.
So you're reading this, many times it's about channeling, you know, and there are people actually channeling demonic entities.
Yes, that's true.
And this is being done by these people. They're creating these entities that are actually taking possession of people. Maybe not their minds, maybe their physical body, because it's energy. Mm-hmm. It's all about energy and the manipulation of it and the misuse of it or the abuse of it.
Yes.
Well, you got a closing comment for us, Ken, until our next show Monday?
Well, just along the theme that we've talked about, that try not to lose if you were raised, you know, by loving parents, and you believe in the principle of charity and love thy neighbor as thyself, and you know, be kind to people, and don't take advantage of people, don't use people, don't abuse people, but rather, you know, be loving towards one another, and don't allow these subtle influences, and particularly among younger people, don't allow these subtle influences dressed up as something to excite your fascination, deceive you. These are very, very clever deceptionists. The Lucifer, Satan, is the most clever deceptionist, the greatest liar of all. And this entity is a pro at this, to put it mildly. And his, you know, his better trained minions are equally proficient and professional in their ability to draw you in. So be wary of these forces that are trying to destroy America in every single area. I mean, they've well infiltrated the government, but that's plainly obvious now. They've infiltrated the court system, law enforcement, the school system. We, you know, now we're just down to families, mother, father, and their kids. Are they going to be wary enough or wise enough to see how all these avenues are being directed towards one goal, breaking morality and supplant it with this wickedness, this, you know, do as thou wilt.
Mm-hmm.
Insanity.
Yeah.
And we talk about this, we'll talk about the double mind, because these promoters of this try to sell it on one hand, and at the same time they're saying two things at the same time. That's it's common throughout the selling tactics of these groups. They'll talk about life in one breath, and then they'll talk about death in the next breath.
Well, the magicians actually use sleight of hand, mm-hmm. and these New World Order types use sleight of word and sleight of deed.
Right.
And that's basically what their modus operandi. That's it.
Yes. It's as deceitful as it can get. We know how all our mainstream politicians, how there's no bounds to their, you know, their calumny. There's no bounds. They are pathological liars. They reverse everything. They reverse the truth of everything. What they accuse others are, they do.
Yes.
When they talk about, you know, these Al-Qaeda terrorists, they are the terrorists.
Yes. Okay, well, Ken, we're out of time. I want to thank you for tonight's show. It was very interesting. I want to encourage the listening audience to go to Ken Adachi's website, educate-yourself.org. There's just an incredible wealth of information there. And do read not just the articles. Actually, read some of the communications that Ken gets. Some are actually funny. And you'll see when you're getting it, when you can take Ken's side on a lot of issues. So, Ken, I want to say goodnight and thanks. Time to say goodnight to the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Ken Adachi. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again tomorrow night. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.